John chapter 10, verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my Father, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. So we're learning about the Good Shepherd, and I just briefly want in the next 10 minutes to think about three things about this Good Shepherd, three things to remember. Now, I think every single sermon I've heard on this chapter has basically followed the same pattern. Look how stupid sheep are. And the preacher will sort of tell stories about sheep and show how stupid they are and say, I'll spend all the time going, oh, look at you, you're all sheep and you're all silly, you're all shepherd, don't you need looking after? That is quite entertaining. And being Welsh, I do have sheep stories. There is one occasion I can remember where I was playing golf with my family and a few sheep were shepherdless and they'd wandered very close to the green. And being a fairly arrogant golfer as I am, I thought, oh, it doesn't matter about those sheep. I'll hit it on the green, so I won't go anywhere near them. So three wood, go for my shot. Miles up in the air, slightly right. It goes very, very high, very, very far into the distance. It goes down, it goes down, it goes down, it goes down. Sheep goes down, straight on the top of its head. It did live, thankfully, but it did lie on the ground for quite a long time, which is a bit worrying. Sheep are silly. They shouldn't go on golf courses, and maybe actually the lesson of that story is that golfers are silly too. But the emphasis of this chapter is not about how silly sheep are. It's about the love of the shepherd, the love of the shepherds. And the first thing I think we see about the good shepherd here is that the good shepherd is no hired hand. And we see that from verses 11 through to 14. Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees here. We can tell from earlier on in the chapter and the previous chapter. He's speaking to Pharisees. Now the Pharisees, they weren't in a technical legal position of authority, but they did have the responsibility of shepherding the spiritual life of the community. They were supposed to be the shepherds of God's people, and yet they were not good shepherds. In the previous chapter, Jesus heals a man, and the Pharisees, these not good shepherds, demonstrate by their actions that they don't care anything for these sheep that they're supposed to be put in charge of. So where in different cases Jesus is speaking against the Pharisees for their hypocrisy or their just mere religiosity, here he's speaking against the fact that they don't actually care about the people that they've been given charge of. And that's what Jesus talks about in these verses. Here we have the image of a hired hand that Martin played the role of very well. Hired hands would always have a baseball cap on backwards. That's in the Greek. What would a hired hand do at the first sign of danger? Well, as soon as a wolf comes along, the hired hand, he doesn't own the sheep. They're not his sheep. He's got no vested interest in them. So, of course, he's going to leave them. He's going to abandon them. He's going to run away. And it says explicitly in verse 13, the man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. The primary reason that he cares nothing for them is that they're not his sheep. They are the shepherd's sheep. We are Jesus' sheep. Verse 14 makes that really clear, where Jesus says, he uses the word mine. Like, they are mine. These are my sheep. This hired hand, they don't own the sheep, but the good shepherd does. And I think that's a really beautiful thing, that if you're a Christian, Jesus says, you are mine. Not in a ugly, possessive way, but in a way that a father watching his son playing football, the son scores a brilliant goal or something like that, and the father standing on the touchline says to the other dads, that's my son. There's this warmth there. There's this, yes, I'm so glad that sheep belongs to me. And Jesus says that over us. Jesus is no hired hand. He cares for us because we are his if we are Christians. That's the first thing. The second thing, the good shepherd doesn't run from wolves. And we see that in verse 14 and following. Well, verse 11 and following, I suppose. The good shepherd sees the wolf coming and will not run, even if it kills him. I think we all value security, don't we? I think all of us like to feel safe. We like to feel in control. And one way we do that is by compartmentalizing our fears. We limit the things that we think about, and where possible, we chase away the kind of infinite cloud of possible dangers that surrounds us. It's a very useful thing to do, because can you imagine what state of panic we'd be in if we were constantly scared of all the constant possibilities of things that could go wrong at every single moment? It's an infinite cloud of possible dangers, but we hide our fears and we construct this illusion of safety. We get insurance, we put away savings for a rainy day, and we get burglar alarms. We do all of these things to construct an illusion of safety and control around us. But we're not actually safe. It is an illusion. It's a useful illusion, but it is still an illusion. We live in a dangerous world. There are snakes, and there is violence, and there is unemployment, and there is danger, there is disease all around us. We are not actually safe. We are mortal. We're frail and feeble sheep, and we need protecting from the vicious wolves that surround us. And I think the Bible would say that the most dangerous wolf that surrounds us is the wolf called death. This wolf is stalking us with a kind of tragic inevitability. His teeth are sharp like razors. His claws are like daggers. And he's always there, stalking us, waiting for that day where he sinks his teeth into us. And this wolf will not be satisfied just with one bite. This wolf, if it can, will hold us forever in death eternally. But the good shepherd will not run from such a wolf. Jesus will not run from death. He willingly gives his life to keep his sheep safe from this wolf. We see it in verse 17 and 18 as well, that this death is no accident. What does Jesus say there? The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I receive from my Father. Jesus is bringing the image of the shepherd into reality. And he predicts his own death. And he predicts his own resurrection. Not a death that came about by accident. Not a death that came about because he didn't have any choice in the matter. But a death that he willingly, deliberately, with forethought, deliberately went towards. Jesus, the good shepherd, will not run from the wolf called death. He deliberately chose to die for his people. The good shepherd doesn't run from wolves. And thirdly and finally, the good shepherd is growing his flock. One of the great heroes of the 19th century was a man called David Livingstone. And I don't know if you know anything about him. I don't know if you even know that name. Maybe it's new to you. David Livingstone was kind of a really macho bloke. He was an explorer. He mapped out a lot of Africa. He found the Victoria Falls and named it after his queen. He spent a lot of time searching for the source of the River Nile. Just a really dramatic, big personality that everyone in the country of Britain, anyway, looked up to for his exploration. But what was behind his motivation? Why was he exploring? Was it just the thing that people did? Was it just a challenge, something to be conquered? Was it to build his own sense of self-worth? No. Actually, when David Livingstone died, he revealed exactly what motivated him. And you can see on his tombstone, even to this day, the words of verse 16. "Other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice." It's in the King James Version. And you can see that in Westminster Abbey. This man who explored so much of Africa was doing it with the purpose that other sheep would be brought into Jesus' fold. That's what we see in these verses. Jesus' heart, not just for the Jews that he was speaking to there, but his heart for the entire world. And we've seen that. I love to think of the spread of the gospel in the last 200 years, especially. It's remarkable just how the church has grown in the most closed countries possible. I mean, who would have thought when the Cultural Revolution happened in China, when all the missionaries were kicked out, when all the seminaries were closed down, who would have thought what would happen next? Massive church growth. That is only the work of God. The idea of a closed country to the gospel is an absolutely ridiculous one. No one can close a country to God. Jesus has sheep all over the world. Jesus has sheep in North Korea. Jesus has sheep in closed Muslim countries. And he will bring them into his fold. There is nothing that any politician can do about it. And to bring it closer to home, there is no... I mean, what's the hardest people group? The most closed people group to the gospel? I think up there has to be your kind of average white British middle class wealthy person. There is a closedness to the gospel there. And it can feel quite discouraging when we have conversations with our colleagues and neighbours who maybe fit into that category, maybe they don't, maybe they're in other categories, but they seem so closed. No people group is closed to the gospel. Jesus has his sheep even here in wealthy, white, middle-class South Woodford, and he will bring them into his fold. Maybe you're one of those people who you've been quite closed to the idea of Jesus, quite closed to the idea of him being your shepherd. Will you hear his voice calling you today? Maybe you're one of his sheep. Maybe he's someone, or maybe you're someone that Jesus wants to lead to green pastures, to quiet waters, to rest, to nourishment, to freedom, to fullness of life. Whatever your past has been, if you follow that voice today, you can be part of that fold too. And as well, I think this is a challenge, this verse, to Christians, because this is what Jesus is doing. This essentially is what the whole of this part of history is about. The time between Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection, returning to heaven, and the time where he will come again. It's all about bringing sheep into his sheepfold. And our lives are about bringing people into that fold as well. We can be involved in Jesus' great mission. Yesterday was a great occasion where lots of people came into this room to hear about, well, they came to do a quiz, but they heard about Jesus. Let's not satisfy ourselves with just bringing people into a building. Well done if you invited someone yesterday. But let's follow up. Let's ask our friends and neighbours and colleagues and family, what did you think about what Martin said yesterday? Let's be bold and brave and have that same spirit of exploration that David Livingstone had. And especially that same heart for mission that Jesus has here in this verse, to bring other sheep into the sheepfold. So there's two challenges for you from this passage about the Good Shepherd. I think it's wonderful to think about Jesus as this Good Shepherd. Our hearts be full of worship about that. But also, let's be challenged. Let's be challenged. Are you following Jesus? Are you one of his sheep? If not, why not? Maybe you could become one of his sheep today. And secondly, will you join and take part in Jesus' great mission of bringing other sheep into that sheepfold.